Proof of stake seems a very bad solution for a decentralized, censorship-resistant global monetary asset. And it's inherently equity-like rather than money-like, which is how a proof of work works.
This is the Bitcoin Infinity Podcast,
a show where we take you through the Bitcoin rabbit hole and beyond.
Hope you enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Infinity Podcast. My name is Ram.
And I'm Krishna.
And in this episode, we want to cover Bitcoin versus altcoins or other cryptos. So Bitcoin was the first ever cryptocurrency that was created that solved the double spending problem. It was the first electronic cash that worked. And Satoshi's design was open source. It started gaining values, and it definitely wasn't the last cryptocurrency that was created. And as of today, there is around 15,000 cryptocurrencies on CoinMarketCap. And it's not a joke. Like, Bitcoin is around a 1 trillion market cap, and the remaining market cap of all other cryptos stands at around $1.3 trillion. So it's not a joke, but...
Yeah, we basically wanted to do this episode because we keep getting asked this question by a lot of people. What is the best crypto to invest in? What is the best crypto to put on money in? And it happened to us even like 3-4 years back, where we thought, okay, let's just put some money in, in one of the other tokens. Let's see if we can just 100 times our money. And a lot of people fall for this, bait. It's like everybody wants to get rich quick. And that's one of the main reasons why people go to the other cryptos. And of course, some of the cryptos claim that, they have actual value to it. But anyway, so we wanted to address this question. That's the reason why we want to make this episode.
Yeah, and what worries me greatly is people think, Bitcoin was the first in this form of technology, and people always think whatever is first in the technology space doesn't always succeed. For example, MySpace versus Facebook, and whatever is the next Bitcoin is going to shine and is going to be worth more than Bitcoin. So people are always chasing the next Bitcoin, and it's no surprise that we are seeing so many Bitcoin clones. And another funny thing is people go for coins that are really cheap. For example, if Dogecoin's price is around 50 cents, people think, okay, if I put $100, I get 200 Dogecoins, versus if I buy Bitcoin, I'm going to get only a fraction. So I might as well buy Dogecoin, and potentially Dogecoin can become the next Bitcoin. And I'm not even kidding. I have friends who are really smart, but they've fallen into this trap, thinking the price, they have no idea of the circulating supply, and they've fallen into this. So this is what worries us, and we really, really wanted to cover this, but we wanted to set the stage up for Bitcoin as why Bitcoin is actually money. So I highly recommend listening to our first two episodes about why Bitcoin is money and all the nuances of decentralization about Bitcoin. So yeah, let's get into it. So we've previously established why Bitcoin is money, why Bitcoin is hard money, and naturally any clone of Bitcoin will possess the same properties of Bitcoin. So what makes Bitcoin special? Why has Bitcoin thrived amongst all other clones and other cryptos? I think the most important aspect is decentralization and the way Bitcoin came into being, how Bitcoin was conceived. For any digital system to function as a digital cash, it has to be outside the control of any third party. Its operation needs to continue conforming to the protocol, and no third party should stop any payments. So that's what makes it neutral and decentralized. Let's see how Bitcoin came into being. I like how Saifedean puts it, Bitcoin's conception as immaculate conception. So basically, Bitcoin was started by this pseudonymous engineer called Satoshi. Satoshi posted the design on an obscure mailing list with a small group of cypherpunks. And after receiving feedback for 2 months, Satoshi published the code and performed the first transaction with this other cypherpunk called Halfine. So basically, there was no pre-mining. Satoshi didn't set the limit to 21 million and assign start the network with 10 million coins. That's not how it started. Satoshi started with 0 bitcoins in the network, initially Satoshi was spending energy and mining, and there was no incentive for Satoshi to mine because there was no market for Bitcoin, there was no price attached to Bitcoin. So and whenever, like, after spreading the word, whenever anyone else started to mine, Satoshi would turn off his or their miner so that the distribution is even more fair. And the reason I say distribution is fair is Satoshi didn't, like, give away to, like, friends or, you know, or did any airdrop. Like, anyone who had access to a decent laptop with access to energy, like, could mine the Bitcoin. So, and after, like, 1.5 years, like, in mid-2010, Satoshi just disappeared, like, and no one ever has any clue about the, like, the whereabouts of Satoshi. And the reason I bring this is it's very important is there's no central figure controlling or proposing new features or controlling the consensus protocol of Bitcoin. There have been, like, prominent people, influential people in Bitcoin space who have tried to change the consensus protocol and they failed, so which we'll cover very soon. But yeah, that way Bitcoin has this magic sauce where it is truly decentralized without any owner. And any clone of Bitcoin, they face this existential crisis. Mainly because, like, if I clone Bitcoin, like, there is already a Bitcoin. Like, there's no reason to clone. And Bitcoin already has this network effect. Even if I clone Bitcoin and it has the same monetary properties, like, why will you use, like,
actually, if you think about it, like, any currency or, you know, any commodity or, you know, even all the cryptocurrencies other than Bitcoin, they have their ideas, the exact same use case of Bitcoin. You know, they are looking for liquidity. It's not like, you know, consumption or production, but all they want is liquidity. And, you know, if you want to, you know, store value or wealth, it's important to store it in some medium that is liquid. So if Bitcoin is, like, the more liquid or the most liquid cryptocurrency, why would you prefer to go and hold your wealth or value in something else, you know, like any other altcoin? And also think about this idea, right? I mean, if your employer is paying you in a form of money that's accepted by, say, 1 billion people, compared to he's paying you in a form of money that's accepted by maybe like 1 million people. Obviously, you would want to earn it in the medium that's accepted by more people. So again, like, all monetary systems, if you think about it, tend towards one. If you think about it, all individuals want to store their wealth in that monetary asset. Not because, you know, they don't believe that the others do not exist or anything. It's just because that is the most liquid one, and that's where everything's going to tend towards. You know, while certain monetary networks are, you know, larger, more liquid than Bitcoin today, and they are actually, you know, just two of them, I think, like, or maybe three: US dollar, euro, and maybe the yen. All the individuals choosing to store their percentage of wealth in Bitcoin are doing so because of their belief that it is more secure. You know, of all the properties that we've discussed before, like, you know, decentralized, it's censorship resistant, it's got a fixed supply, and it's a good store of value. And also because of the expectation that so many others are also going to opt in, which will eventually increase the liquidity, and that will, you know, bring more option for me to exchange it. And that is the reason why, you know, all monetary systems are always going to tend to one. And if someone comes to you and argues, you know, we can have all these different forms of money coexisting, it would be incorrect.
So yeah, a clone of Bitcoin is certainly doomed to fail. What about a different variation of Bitcoin? What about a better Bitcoin? What if Bitcoin was faster? Or there are some cryptocurrencies that want to make Bitcoin more scalable by increasing the block size. There are some cryptos which doesn't like the volatility of Bitcoin, so there's a stable coin. Some feel Bitcoin doesn't have any utility as by itself, and there are some utility tokens which they think they're better than Bitcoin. So what about these? Like, first of all of these projects or altcoins, they have, like, a team in charge. They begin the project, they pre-mine most of the coins in circulation, they market it, they do press releases, and no matter how hard they try, they cannot demonstrate the credibility that they have no control over the direction of the currency. And we clearly saw this in the 2017 bull run, where, like, so many projects came into being, and like ICOs or initial coin offerings were offered, wherein like teams would come in, they would literally raise money using these ICOs. Since they've largely pre-mined the coins in circulation, they would just dump it on the retail market. And even if they manage to like succeed as a, let's say, a privately issued but global reserve currency, like you can imagine like the small set of creators would become extremely rich. Like central banks and national governments will not take kindly to this undermining authority of theirs. And it's not going to be easy for people to accept this as well. And even if they claim to be decentralized, but if they have a specific set of founders and if government come to these founders and say, hey, shut it down or you go to jail. And if they don't have an option but to shut it down, then there's clearly a central point of failure and it's clearly not decentralized. On the contrary, like if you look at Bitcoin, like there's no central figure. You can't point at anyone, can't point gun at anyone and say, hey, shut down Bitcoin. So yeah, it's literally impossible for any altcoin to replicate how decentralized Bitcoin is. Like decentralization is a spectrum and Bitcoin is at the maximum, at the far end of it. And there have been altcoins that's tried being decentralized and it's clearly not been decentralized. One classic example is Ethereum. I think this happened in 2015, 16. Ethereum is basically like, basically Bitcoin wasn't very programmable. Bitcoin has a scripting language on top of it, but it wasn't very programmable. And a team initiated by Vitalik Buterin, they started Ethereum so that it's a decentralized currency, but it can be programmed. It can have smart contracts on top of it. And there was this first smart contract called DAO, short for Decentralized Autonomous Organization. That was the first implementation of the Ethereum smart contract. And basically like 150 million was added into this contract. And what happened is there was a malicious actor and they were able to run a code, take this money out of the smart contract, essentially steal it, but perfectly valid according to the Ethereum protocol. And what these founders of Ethereum did was they reversed the transaction. And immutability is something, it's a holy grail of all the of a decentralized currency. And if you violate that, then I'm not sure if anyone can accept that as money anymore. And sure, from the eyes of the founder, this was a hack and this was a theft. But according to the protocol, it's not. Once you reverse the transaction and start a new fork of Ethereum saying, hey, this is the new Ethereum. And whatever Ethereum that existed before this hack or the attack is called Ethereum Classic. And the founders were able to impose that on the network, impose that on the community, impose that on the users of the network. Yeah, that clearly set a bad precedent to all the altcoins. And in a way, it sort of proved like why decentralization was important and why Bitcoin has still survived the last 12 years, 13 years without having any central authority.
Speaking of central points of failure, in 2017, there was a social attack on Bitcoin. So the idea was Satoshi had built in his initial code that, you know, there was a limit on the block size. So what it basically means is if I increase the size of the block, I can process more transactions over a shorter time. And Satoshi had built a limit on it. And he had said that, you know, over time, as the global bandwidth improves, this can be increased at any point. But also it's important to understand that increasing the block size means you and I any normal person will not be able to run a node in their house because of the data that's required. Instead of, you know, running it on a 1 TB hard drive, you might need to run it on a bigger hard drive, which maybe a lot of people might not be able to afford. And you have to run it in, these data centers. So which automatically makes it more centralized because then you start depending on these data centers. You need to trust them in order to run the node for you. So at one point in 2017, over 80% of the, you know, the mining processing people, and also the biggest maker of Bitcoin mining equipment, prior leaders of Bitcoin and a large number of, you know, major custodians and exchanges like, you know, Coinbase, Grayscale, they were all in favor of increasing the block size with an upgrade that was known as SegWit 2x. And if you think about it, that's an overwhelming amount of support among the corporate level players in the industry, as they describe themselves and their New York agreement as a critical mass of the Bitcoin ecosystem. Yet, with so many people coming together, they failed because the existing developers and most importantly, the majority of the individual node operators, you know, common people who were running the nodes in their houses, and they were not on board with the plan, along with also multiple other reasons, it was aborted. This kind of goes to show there's no centralized point of failure or, you know, centralized entity that can change, you know, the working of Bitcoin. If you remember, the Bitcoin network has a node, the miners and the developers, with the node being the final arbiter of consensus, but relying on miners to order transactions and, of course, developers to create updates that both the miners and the node network need to accept as being improvements. So the natural state of the network itself is to resist change, especially, you know, to the foundational design of the system. So it requires overwhelming consensus to change something. And these changes are backward compatible. So any node that started running the first day that Bitcoin was created, even today, if you are running that node in your house, you're still going to be able to access the entire blockchain, which kind of is not there in most of these so-called better Bitcoin cryptocurrencies, you know, altcoins. So again, like, we can think of this structure of Bitcoin itself as similar to the US Constitution, you know, where there are three branches of the government to limit each other. You know, they're like the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial are like various ways to overrule each other and have staggered term limits. And this is a good design because it makes the political system resistant to changing too quickly and thus, you know, developing some authoritarianism or, you know, how similar to what happened in the Ethereum Foundation. They said, okay, let's just cancel all this transaction because maybe we don't like it, or maybe it was for a good reason, but maybe tomorrow it could be for a reason that is more suitable for them. So again, the point is, in Bitcoin, there is no centralized point of failure.
Okay, the next crypto fad that I wanted to cover was blockchain as a technology. Like, there was this period where a lot of people said Bitcoin is not important, but the underlying technology, which is blockchain, that's what is important. That's what is most innovative. That's what holds promise. Again, to reiterate, like, blockchain was not the best invention of Bitcoin. It's basically solving the double spending problem, which was actually solved by the proof of work algorithm. And the second best feature of Bitcoin is actually the difficulty adjustment. And blockchain is basically, if you've read computer science, it's just linked list, like, and it's only an append only linked list. And basically, money is just a ledger, and Bitcoin is just an append only, or just an immutable ledger which has immutable history. So if you take blockchain, and if you are trying to use blockchain as a technology, it's like you have a solution that is looking for problems. So for example, there were these theories, or there were these projects which were like, which had utility tokens, and they would use blockchain as a technology. For example, storage, like Filecoin. Basically, it's a token or it's a coin where you can lend out storage space in return for Filecoin, which would have some monetary value. Like, this absolutely makes no sense. Like, mainly because, why would I need to hold Filecoin as an asset just because I need to buy storage? Like, if I need to buy storage, I would transact my money. If I have US dollar, let's say Bitcoin doesn't exist in this world, I have US dollar, I would convert US dollar to Filecoin to buy the storage. And then if I have excess Filecoin, I would transact back to US dollar. Same thing happens on the other side. This is very similar to trading casino chips in a casino. Like, I go to a casino, the casino says, you can only gamble with our casino chips. Okay, fair enough. I transfer US dollar, they give me casino chips, I gamble. At the end of the day, I go back home, not with casino chips, but with US dollar. So why would any utility token, which we know has no monetary value, have a non-zero holding period? Like, it definitely doesn't make sense. And even worse is, like, there were these blockchain projects that would be used for real world purposes. For example, let's say there's something called real estate coin. And if you have that coin, you would have access to your house or something like that. this again won't make sense because the blockchain has no authority over what is happening in the physical realm. Like you can own your house with a private key, but like there's no one stopping another person coming into your house, breaking the door and taking ownership of the house. Like the blockchain is totally unaware of it. And in order for you to retain the ownership of your house, we need like a central trusted third party, like a government, to make sure like you retain the ownership and maintain a ledger of who owns which house. So yeah, like projects like these came into being and blockchain was used as a propaganda to promote these projects. And so yeah, blockchain as a technology is actually immensely inefficient and slow compared to any centralized solution. If you actually need a decentralized solution, it makes sense if it is for money. And like Bitcoin's mechanism for establishing the authenticity and the validity of the ledger is extremely complex and complicated, but it serves an explicit purpose: issuing a currency and moving value online without the need for a trusted third party. This is what blockchain is essentially needed for. And yeah, don't get me wrong, like some of the blockchain ideas were actually really innovative, but it just lacked a base money layer. And if you take those ideas and then put it on Bitcoin, like eventually most of the ideas, they are being built on Bitcoin, on top of Bitcoin as a layer 2 and layer 3 application. And all of these blockchain ideas that existed from 2017 to 2020 will eventually built on top of Bitcoin. Okay, that covers blockchain as a technology. What about Bitcoin versus Ethereum and the likes of Ethereum? So let's start with Ethereum. Ethereum started as a programmable money. They changed their narrative to Ethereum as a platform with where you can build decentralized applications, also known as dApps. They've changed the narrative to decentralized finance, or in short for DeFi. Now it's apparently called Ultrason money or something. So let's clear something. Ethereum does not have an anonymous creator like Satoshi. Ethereum is clearly directed by a set of individuals, one of them being Vitalik Buterin. And Ethereum currently do not have a fixed supply. Like how Bitcoin has like 21 million coins. Like I know if I get one Bitcoin, I know I'm getting one by 21 million of the asset value of the network. That's not true for Ethereum. It keeps inflating. They've changed the total supply so many times. Another thing about Ethereum is the cost of running a full node. So in Bitcoin, I can buy a Raspberry Pi for $30. I can buy a 500 GB hard disk or even 1 TB hard disk for $80. I just need a casing. I just need an internet connection. I am done with building a Bitcoin node for $100 or max like $150. So the barrier to entry to start running a node is really, really cheap for Bitcoin. And that's what makes Bitcoin really decentralized. Like it's very important to keep the block size small because the cost of running a Bitcoin node should be small so that it's decentralized. This is not true for Ethereum. Ethereum requires close to 8 TB and most of the nodes are not running from the Genesis block. Genesis block is nothing but the first block that is mined in the network. So in Bitcoin, the Genesis block is the first transaction that Satoshi made, and all of the Bitcoin nodes that exist in the network has all the transaction pointing back to Satoshi's transaction. That is not true for Ethereum. Ethereum has two kinds of nodes. One is called archival node, which has all the transactions, and not all nodes are archival nodes. They have something called full nodes, which clearly are not full nodes. Full nodes maintain the state of the blockchain, but they don't have all the transactions. And even the size of full node goes over 1 TB compared to a Bitcoin full node, which is around like 400 GB. And most of the Ethereum nodes, they run on this thing called Infura, where like close to like 22% of fully synced Ethereum quote unquote full nodes, which they're not actually full nodes, they're hosted on Infura. It's basically hosted on AWS, something like AWS. Like what is stopping a couple of employees on Amazon going and turning Infura off? Like we saw this in like Facebook went down recently because of some issue, and some employees with a certain badge access can literally go inside and turn it back on. So this is clearly possible. We can clearly socially engineer such an attack on Ethereum. It's not happened so far, but it is a critical point of failure. Another thing that I wanted to talk about was all these new projects. like including Ethereum, right now they're going shifting to a new consensus algorithm. Like they feel they want to be cleaner in terms of technology. They don't want to consume as much energy as Bitcoin. They feel Bitcoin consuming energy, that is the proof of work algorithm, is an unnecessary step. So they have a innovative, cleaner, clever mechanism to actually achieve consensus, which they call as proof of stake. So do you want to discuss about proof of stake?
Sure. So proof of stake is a system where holders of the cryptocurrency, so let's say in this case Ethereum, lock up their coins, or we call it in double quotes, stake their coins, and use them to vote on a valid blockchain. And as they vote, they get rewarded with more coins for, you know, successfully creating new blocks. So instead of, you know, like how Ram mentioned, committing electricity or like, you know, processing power to create new blocks, they are committing their stake of the coins in order to do so. So if you think about it, the more coins that you have, the more voting power you have. And those coins, or those with more coins there, are earning more new coins through staking. So since they don't need to actually expend any resource to stake, they can simply, you know, put their coins in. And just by doing that, they can actually earn more coins. So if you think about it, the more coins you put in a stake, you know, as more blocks get created, you get more share of your coins. So In simple analogy, it's like imagine a political system where you get a vote, or you get to vote for every $100 that you have, and that also get paid by the government for casting your vote. So let's take an example. Like I'm just a high school teacher. Let's say I make around $20,000. So which means I have almost 200 votes. And because I'm going to vote, I earn like $200 from the government. And let's say Ram or someone like much richer, let's say they have $200 million in net worth.
I wish.
They get 2 million votes, and also they earn like $2 million from the government for just for voting. Automatically, that makes him a more valuable citizen than I am. And not just by small, by a factor of close to, you know, maybe 100,000. And he also gets paid more by the government just because he's wealthy. So you can already see where I'm going. I'm not sure if this is a very good system. And not just me, that's not a system most of the folks want to be in. Eventually, it'll like more likely to get consolidated into an oligopoly. Like few people are going to just have concentrated wealth. And it just gets too centralized. And that kind of defeats the purpose of a decentralized blockchain itself. And also, if you think about it, from the problem that I just mentioned, proof of stake seems a very or less likely or very bad solution for a decentralized, censorship resistant monetary, global monetary asset. And it's inherently equity like rather than money like, which is how a proof of work works. So in a proof of work system, I think we've already discussed this, but I just want to reiterate that particularly the Bitcoin network with its purposeful small nodes, the power is just distributed between miners, developers, and these individual nodes. So your ability to be a miner is based on your ability to put forth capital and find low-cost electricity rather than, you know, the already enriched miners having an advantage by increasing their advantage over time, like how proof of stake works. Here, let's say I'm a new miner. I actually have a technical advantage because newer machines are going to come up. They're going to have more processing power with regards to Moore's law. And I already don't have any existing sunk cost. So which means someone who's already in the mining business, they have to first recover their cost from already investing in all the mining equipment. But me being a new miner with a new mining system, which has a better processing power, all I need to do is find a good cheap source of electricity and I can just start mining. Plus, if you think about the Bitcoin network's designer, they went to, you know, great length to make it easy and cheap to run a full node, which means you can always audit the entire blockchain and reject blocks that don't conform with the rules of the node. So in summary, if you think about it, in Bitcoin network, the real power actually lies with the nodes and not the miners. So even if the miners try to collude and, you know, mine blocks that are invalid, I can just run a node in my house. It's not very expensive. And I can just say, okay, that doesn't seem right. Let me just reject those blocks.
It's not possible in proof of stake.
Exactly. Right? That's not possible in proof of stake. Yeah.
Yeah, and like proof of work was very analogous to like gold mining, right? It sort of worked because money had a cost. Like it wasn't easy to create money. You had to spend resources to create money. So, and money that doesn't have a cost sort of ends up being political in nature. And we've seen this in real world life. It's actually called the Cantillon effect. Like people who are closer to the money, they're always going to be in an advantageous position. So yeah, to conclude, think of Bitcoin as a base money layer and all decentralized technologies like DeFi or decentralized finance being built on top of Bitcoin. Like Bitcoin is the layer one, layer two being the Lightning Network, which is basically solving Bitcoin's scalability concerns. And layer three can be where the actual decentralized applications can live on. This is much similar to other protocols like Internet Protocol. Internet Protocol, which is TCP/IP, was developed in 1970s, which is 4.5 decades ago. And it still continues to be the foundation of internet with no signs of that network effect weakening, and even in the foreseeable future. And the reason it survived so far is because it's simple and any modifications can be done on the protocol. Similarly, Bitcoin will continue adopting new innovation, new ideas in terms of updates. For example, we saw in the Taproot update, one of the most significant update in recent times, where it factored in a lot of privacy concerns in Bitcoin. So it sort of invalidated so many privacy altcoins. Bitcoin was able to adopt those privacy features onto the Bitcoin network. So yeah, Bitcoin will keep evolving and it will set the precedent for a base money layer.
People often think of cryptocurrencies as one big similar asset class, but for most part, proponents of other blockchains are often the most vocal critics of the Bitcoin network, because they attempt to market their own coin. Meanwhile, if you look at Bitcoin enthusiasts, they are among the crypto ecosystem's largest critics, and they tend to highlight the scams, the hacks, some centralization problems that are common among the altcoin. Also, cryptocurrency exchanges, they have numerous coins. They have an incentive to get you excited about these new coins because they make money through these trading volumes. So even if it's just a meme coin, these days we have this Dogecoin or, the Shiba Inu coin with their briefly short-lived spikes. The exchanges just want to get you in on the action, especially near the top of these spikes when everybody's talking about it. Their financial incentive is for the users to hold a large amount of these coins, and when you trade frequently, irrespective of whether you make money or lose, at the end of the day the exchange always makes money. So each person has their own reasoning and liking for, they want to speculate or they want to do long-term investing. But make sure you understand what you're getting into when you are venturing into these other blockchains, other than the Bitcoin network. Because at the end of the day, all these smart contract platforms, they are just equity securities, and Bitcoin is the only true monetary asset.
Hey, if you've made it this far, thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed the conversation, be sure to subscribe to the show. You can also send us your feedback to hello@bitcoininfinitypodcast.com or visit our website, bitcoininfinitypodcast.com. We're also on Twitter at Bitcoin8Podcast. That is BITCOIN number 8 podcast. As always, this show is meant for educational purposes only and is not financial advice.